Hello folks, it's your friend Bernie here and welcome to today's episode of the Community is the Key, What is a Secret podcast, which is a co-creation of the Co-Working Values podcast with Christian from Salto. And in this series, we interview people all over the world, loads of different industries, about what it takes to make a community. Because in the co-working and co-living industry, we love talking about community, but how do you actually do it? It's like catching smoke in a jar. And today's guest is someone I've known since 2018. I first saw him speak at the Co-Live Summit with WeShare in Paris in 2018. It was about the time his book New Aging came out, and there's a link in the show notes to that. And Matthias is a prolific architect and is very, very interested above average rate of how we will live in communities in cities and in rural projects going forward, the role of each generation informing and shaping and communicating society. This is a really, really interesting conversation, and I'd urge you to click the links in the show notes and follow Matthias's work as it evolves. Thank you very much for your time and attention today, and let's get into the show. Hello, folks. It's another Co-Working Values podcast. I am over the moon to have a man called Matthias in the house, and I'm just going to hand right over, and I'm going to say, Matthias, what are you known for, and what would you like to be known for?
Hello, hello. Yeah, my name is Matthias. I'm an architect out of New York, originally coming out of Germany. So I think I'm an architect, but I see myself much more as kind of an entrepreneurial inventor of new places and experiences. And because architecture is not just about creating buildings, it's about creating environments that empower people to live good lives.
That's amazing. So I first discovered you at the Co-Live Summit in France in 2018, and then shortly after picked up your book, New Aging. And I went to that conference, as I said before we were recording, thinking, oh my God, this is going to be lots of, digital nomads talking about co-living. And actually what I found, and I've been telling everyone ever since, is that Co-Living Summit was a group of people who are concerned citizens about the future of community in the world. And can you say a little bit about your book to set up the beginning of our discussion? Because it's better you say it than me.
Yeah, so the book that I wrote is called New Aging, Live Smarter Now to Live Better Forever, which has actually a really fun, interesting history. I was teaching at the University of Pennsylvania. And as a male turning about to turn 40, I became interested what's about in my life when I'm getting older as an architect. And I saw all these kind of things that society prepares us for, right? So retirement communities, nursing homes, and so on. And none of them I thought were appropriate and would be anything that I would like to experience. So I used this opportunity and I pitched this as a study at the University of Pennsylvania. They agreed, but they gave me a warning. They said, Matthias, if you do a studio on aging and not enough people sign up, you don't have a job. And I was like, well, whatever, I try. And my course, to every people's surprise, was oversubscribed by a multitude. So I had this amazing group of young architects or emerging architects to research what we could do different. And they came up with, they traveled around the world and they came back with so much information, which then over time, right, we used it, of course, in the studio. And then later on, it really helped me to build the foundation on the book New Aging, which became basically a self-help guide with multiple tips and tricks, what you could do different in your own life to live a better life and live a longer life. And it's actually not very mysterious. A lot of things are very self-explanatory, but when you put them together, it becomes a much more holistic kind of experience that we all can follow.
So look, our theme for this podcast series is community is the key and what is the secret. And, in your work and in Dan's work around blue zones and stuff, one of the basically it's about food and community and movement. And what is it, I think what I want to ask actually, I'm going to divert my question, is what is it that was interesting for those architectural students around the community aspect of what came out of what they studied and found and, you know, explored?
Yeah, this community, what is so interesting, we are by nature mostly social, right? We have very, very different traits. Some people are more introverted, extroverted, and so on. So there's a lot of difference between us. But in the end, we do gravitate to other people. And that creates happiness, that makes the feeling of belonging. All of these kind of beautiful things that when we're young, we actually take for granted quite a bit. And when we're getting older, what happens is that obviously part of our community passes. It becomes smaller. It becomes harder to replenish our social connections because we're not so embedded into different activities. But that is exactly what we have to address. We have to make sure that we are constantly replenishing our social connections, make these bonds, and that is the basis of a community. And these communities can happen naturally. So, for example, family would be the first one, right? And hopefully there's always new family members that are being replenished. There are more kids and grandkids and so on. But then there are also friends, and we can make new friends. And sometimes we're also in a building where we maybe don't know anyone, but now we could be helped and supported to meet new people within the community, and with this, making friends and making these meaningful social connections.
Well, one of the, I'm dying to ask, I haven't quite thought this question out, sorry, but it seems I grew up in London and you're in New York, and they're a particular type of city. You know, they seem faster. I'm going to say aggressive, and you're welcome to disagree. And, you know, everything's happening there. And then now I live in Vigo, and there are visibly way more older people out at night in Vigo than there ever were in London. And part of that is to do with the size, but it seems it's easier to be older in a smaller city. But there's, you know, what do you do if you're in somewhere like London and New York?
Yeah, and there are very important lessons actually for us architects and urban planners to take away from your statement, right? Because it doesn't mean that when you get older, you rather live outside of a city, right? Some people make that for a choice, which is fantastic, but many people would like to stay in New York and be in New York, but it becomes more difficult walking. You become maybe slightly insecure how you navigate a city. Hearing becomes more difficult. So, for example, I just experienced that I went to a toy drive at the Chelsea Pier, a huge space, and I went there alone, right? And then I was like, am I just going to be alone there now? And I stood on the table and a group of people came and they started to talk to me and was like, oh, cool, I make new connections. And then suddenly a group of people I haven't seen for 2-3 years showed up and we had that moment of reconnection. However, it was hard to get there. It was incredibly noisy. Me as a 52-year-old man now, having not really taken well care of my ears, it becomes harder to really hear people in noisy conditions. Now, us as architects, right, we have to start to think about how can we create spaces that can calibrate the noise levels better, that older people can hear. How can we make a transition from home to this place easier, safer, and with this much more kind of inviting also for older people, right? So for me, it's very important that especially for these kind of dense areas where all people mix and mingle coming together, that we do look through the lens of older people and basically design around it. Because also the experience is if you design for older people, you create better places for everyone. It's just when we're younger, we can easier compensate for the flaws that were baked into the planning of cities and buildings.
Yeah, acoustics is really important. I'm not sure how I survived when I was younger going out to clubs and holding conversations. And now when I'm in a restaurant and there's that there's a kind of romance to the clattering and chinging and movement in a restaurant, but it's really hard for a conversation at a certain level. And I'm never sure whether that's me getting old or just the reality of the situation.
Yeah, I think this is a reality to getting old, right? And I love restaurants and I like the bustle and hustle, but actually starting to hear a little bit less good than before. And it becomes a little bit of an effort. And then you have to re-ask, oh, what did you say? And you have to lean in more. It becomes at some point less comfortable, right? And then you could make a choice. Maybe I don't go there anymore, which would be absolutely the worst direction. It's rather, let's design these restaurants a little bit better so that there are maybe areas where the sound is mitigated, which is very easily possible, right? It's just different choice of materials and maybe not everywhere, right? Because we can design places where you can find a little bit more intimate, more quieter areas. Other things are louder because we also want to be part of all the action, and younger people maybe don't care so much about the noise level, and but we have to think about everyone here.
And what's one other thing I want to wedge into this conversation is that notion of yours as old people are pioneers, because we were talking before we came on that, you know, everyone's kind of led to believe they should be clocking out and playing golf when they're 60. But, and then the idea, even before I read your book, the idea of going to a retirement home just, you know, didn't work for me. The way you framed the pioneer thing was, I'm going to boldly say that was life-changing for me. So can you explain that a bit?
Amazing. I'm so glad to hear what effect that kind of chapter had for you. Because for me, there are two aspects of the pioneering. First of all, it actually was really grown out of trying to find a new word for being an old person. And at some point came up with this idea where I said, actually, when you get older, you come to a point in life where nobody ever has been before alive, right? And it's quite a feat, right? Because you go into uncharted territory. And when people do that, we call them pioneers. So let's start to call older people pioneers and also treat them that way to support them with the journey into the unknown. And the first time I told my father that he's not an old person, he's actually a pioneer, he just lit up. He was like, oh my God, I am. And it totally changed the way how he thought about himself and also how he treated himself and how he engaged with the surrounding. Because suddenly he felt really comfortable to ask me, it's like, Matthias, I need a little bit of help because this is something that is too far in the future. I don't know how to deal with it. And then the other part is also pioneering your own life. That means, right, our society has set up to a certain degree, really good things, right? Ages of retirement. But that is still coming from old kind of thinking and activities. If you do very physical labor, yes, at some point it should taper down. And hopefully at some point you don't have to do it because it's going to be really hard on your body and maybe you're not going to be able to do it anymore. But that doesn't mean that you should stop being engaged and stop being engaged with meaningful activities. And you can do that either way by maybe doing some mentorship or maybe continuing your work, but maybe in a different capacity, or be a pioneer and actually do something entirely new. And sometimes people follow their dreams. They say, I always wanted to be a painter. I always wanted to be a gardener, or I wanted to invent a new tool. And today, right, I mean, hopefully a lot of older people jump onto new ideas on artificial intelligence and pioneering their own life, but also pioneering maybe new opportunities in business. And then finally, not focusing on what we have to do when we're young. It's all about here is our career and we're focusing on the career. Maybe there's a different value system, maybe focusing more on society, maybe focusing more on the person working on these kind of new ventures. And I think it's a fantastic opportunity to just empower older generations to do new things in business, in lifestyle, in our environments, because there's so much knowledge, so much creativity, so much energy, and it's good for society, but it's also really good for the person itself, because if you stay engaged, you will live longer.
And that kind of thinking, did you always have that, or was there a point in your life where you suddenly had this resistance to conformity and then went looking for something else in a kind of David Bowie kind of way?
Oh, that is a very good question, because I grew up in a three-generation home in Munich, where my grandmother was living with us. And we basically supported her, and especially my mother, when she had a heart attack. And for years, 3 years, I believe, it got worse. We were there, and I was the last one talking to her, and she basically passed in the room next to me. And for me, that always created a very clear sense of aging and passing, but in a kind of a positive way, I would say, because I saw it as something very natural, and I also saw it something that was an incredible bond that happened between the family, where we all were there for somebody to help. And from there on, I think I always had the feeling that when I started to become an architect, is that there's a responsibility that our architecture is supporting people in their lives. I never saw it as buildings that need to maximize returns for the client or create something so outstanding that all the intellectuals love it because it's maybe the new kind of trend in architecture, but then people who are using it maybe don't understand it, cannot use it, and it's just like a self-reflection maybe of somebody in his kind of vision. So I always saw it much more as down to earth to create incredible, beautiful, unforgettable, social and sustainable buildings. And in that process, right, and I really credit my aging to turning 38, where I did look into my own midlife crisis, and with that already looking into the future and realizing it, and then being at the University of Pennsylvania, then running this program for 4 years, and then going to every conference, right, and reading every book, and seeing then suddenly all of these kind of tendencies and the blue zones that you had mentioned before, right, were something I became really interested in. And it felt so logical, right, because when we see ourselves, when we have a purpose during the day where we say, oh, we maybe meet friends for lunch and we may be a little bit more active in finishing our work faster, and we want to talk about something positive to our friends, and maybe we change a little bit how we work so that we enjoy it. But there's also many elements where we can be self-motivating ourselves through positive inputs, and we can see that on a daily basis. And why shouldn't that be also a big effect on our life journey?
There's so I'm gonna move on quickly because of time, but with all that, and the book you published in 2018, and all there's a book, but you can never see how many hours and of research and conversations and everything went into that. So that happens in 2018, and then 2020 we get COVID, and just the way society, humanity, and cities function, dramatically changes, and people know about that. And then we start coming back into meeting each other in 2022. Can you, did you have any particular thoughts or feelings or reflections about how we could reconnect in humanity, or steps we should take forward as a, human race? What a big question, COVID, sorry.
huge question. But COVID, like, incredible impact on all of our lives. And actually, for a couple of weeks, I put on Instagram, like always, a post on one of the chapters from the book that were, I felt like were helpful. For example, stay active. Oh, awesome. Yeah. You saw them. Perfect. One of them was, for example, stay active. And what I did, I live in a 25-story house building in New York, and I just used the stairwell and I just ran it up and down. And social connections. We actually in the office introduced 1 hour every morning where we all were on Zoom together and we did not talk about work. We just talked about us, experiences. We started to play games and we made sure that we were socially connected because there were also a lot of singles in the firm and they really suffered greatly through this kind of period. Then post-COVID, I did had a little bit the feeling that it could have been better in terms of all of us coming out of this isolation and then being like, oh my God, the best thing ever in life is having friends around and making connections and be decent to people and be friendly because we missed everyone. Didn't really turn out that way. But what parallel has happened is that office buildings obviously now have become an option and not a necessity anymore. And the social connections that are happening in an office environment always was a given, and that was something quite natural. So currently, a lot of people try to rethink the office typology, think about how you can kind of prioritize your need for your private space versus the more office and productive space, and how we can rethink it. And then also how, like, the office building now suddenly needs to become more social as an intention, because people are less there and you have to maximize the positive friction between people so that you create these informal connections, which are so valuable. And me personally, I'm very curious and interested in actually what artificial intelligence potentially could help us with, because what I have seen, and I'm actually working with some friends on something we call it Vagel, which is an AI that helps to connect people to people. Because most of the time right now, when people talk about AI, people engage with AI and that's it. But if you use it to connect it as a kind of a host or as a salon kind of methodi or so, that helps you to break maybe some of the barriers that we quite naturally have, right? Because first, when you meet a new person, there's hesitation and you have to create comfort, and then you have to feel like, okay, now I feel like comfortable engaging with a person. AI could become a icebreaker. And we're looking into that, establishing that in buildings, so that that building basically gets a personality and it becomes your friend, and he can connect you to new experiences, new other people. And I don't know where this is really going yet, because it's really early times. But from all the conversations I have, is that people are very interested in it because the true communities are so hard to create, and we need to use anything that is possible to be able to break the ice and to foster meaningful connections. Where, as you described, right, in a village, in a small space, you run into people all the time, and it will feel very weird after the 50th time you ran into the person that you have not said hello yet. And the first hello gonna be the beginning of potentially a very, very long life story. But in big cities, this hello may doesn't happen, right? And you can do it architecturally. When we worked on projects with WeWork way back when, where we created WeLive, which wanted to become a really interesting kind of social engine as an apartment building concept, we intentionally designed the stair connecting two floors smaller so that not two people can easily walk by each other. That meant you walked up the stair, somebody walked down, you had to say like, oh, sorry, let me make a little bit space for you. And that was the icebreaker. So you can do some of these things kind of physical and architectural, but there are also other elements in it when you look into resorts from Club Med or Robinson. There might be the icebreaker who is a person who makes this connection. And maybe there's also a possibility where we can use AI to bring us a little bit closer to with each other.
A couple of little things there is during lockdown in London, because my wife worked for the NHS, our son was, you know, she's a key worker, so we got to go to school. So mm-hmm. I got to know more people in my local area because I took my son to school every day and there was only about three people on the streets. And I just, and that's the first time in 15 years of living in that area of London that I'd stayed there nonstop. And the connections, you know, were stronger as a result of, you know, COVID. And it always made me feel like that's a bit weird how it took a pandemic to be connected to my local area in today's society.
Yeah, that is very fascinating. And I think you have millions and millions of different stories. In our case, right, we're living on 38 and 8 in New York, in the middle of like a region where you have offices and hotels, and the offices became empty and the hotels became COVID hospitals. And walking out of our house, which we barely did, we saw just people being transported dead away, right? And we did not even talk to our neighbors, right? There was like an incredible scare. If somebody needed help, we were there. But I don't know, there was this absolute kind of feeling of emergency and you could just basically be killed by one wrong contact. And
that's a lot to deal with mentally.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, I mean, I worked also on projects in Germany remotely and in Germany, but after a while, like people were like, okay, we're going a little bit back to the office and so on. Here in New York, I mean, my office restarted after 2 years, right? And it was like 2 years of separation. But then I feel like at least in my environment here, our social bond between everyone in the office is incredibly strong because we went through this kind of crisis. And that is maybe also something to really keep in mind, right? When we go through our own journey, getting older, and we have other people around us who are older, it's maybe important to acknowledge that potentially these people are in a crisis, right? There are a lot of challenges that are coming. And we should use these crises actually positively of supporting, and by supporting them, people also learning. And with this, creating like a real interesting kind of sense of reality that can be so helpful for us. And I still must say, having helped my grandmother for 3 years and being there holding her hand in the very last moments, but not many people have that experience. And I'm so glad that I had it because it creates such a different kind of appreciation about life, about reality, but then also maybe an inspiration. What can we do better, right? And how can we change things in our own lives so that we can live the best life possible and then share it with other people? Because that is ultimately the most important thing. It's not just about us. It's really about like a bigger group around us to make that all work together.
That's great. That is, there's a million other questions I could ask you, but that's a very poignant place to conclude. What is there any, you know, one last thing that we didn't get to talk about that you'd like to share with people listening?
Yeah, there are actually endlessly many, as you said, but maybe for me the most important tip for people is that think about aging as early as possible and make the right choices early on so that you can actually work longer on the surrounding and your social connections, that they are going to be here for you when you're older. Very simple example, if you have a bathroom that's not ADA compliant, like handicapped accessible, and you don't do the renovation until you're old and you need it, then it's a real burden. And actually doing these kind of things just helps you to already get over the kind of fears, and you address things and it's not lingering with you. And then the other thing is, keep very aware about your connections with people, and just think about that every new friend you make is a great investment into your future, and vice versa also for the other person. And it's the biggest gift that we have gotten, that we're able to be social and be social connected and embedded in society. And that also means when we look into the bigger aspects in the world, we have to get over ageism, racism, sexual discrimination, and also disputes between countries, right? Because wherever you go, people just want to live a good life with their family and with their friends. And that's connecting all of us, and that's what we should really focus on.
Thanks, Matthias. Where's the best place to connect with you and your work online?
Yeah, easy is if you go to Instagram, it's my last name, it's Hollwich, that's Hollwich. But you can also shoot me an email under mh@hwkn.com. That goes to my work email, and I tend to answer all of them in 24 hours.
That's very impressive. Really appreciate your time and attention today, folks. And thank you for your time, Matthias. If you Google London Co-working Assembly, Co-working Values Podcast, you can find this podcast. And if you could, wherever you listen to your podcasts, whichever app or gadget or platform that is, if you leave some nice reviews, because that helps the show more than you'll ever, ever know. And be careful out there. It is a jungle.